I'm going to call the meeting to order. Apologize for the delay, Mr. Spear. I have been looking at the materials that we got that went through awful fast last time, I know.
We got to talking when we left the hearing room. The last thing we discussed was this chart, and we wondered if the committee fully understood the how to use the chart, basically. And the way it's drawn up here, all this really amounts to, anyone could do this by reading the bill and getting out this pocket calculator and simply multiplying the various bases, 19,000 in our case, 25 in yours, by the rate and come up with these figures. We got the impression that some committee members may feel that just because the figures are contained in the same box, that that's a comparison of how the systems would compare financially, and it isn't. The way I'm coming to think of these various scenarios, with, you know, how would it be with so many benefits or such and such a tax rate, is that you really create an organism. And each organism has its own unique metabolic rate and all kinds of differences, some of which have effects and so forth. But as Rod and anyone else here that he's got to assist him are going to explain to you, one of these organisms may, in order to achieve some result, higher benefits or whatever, or lower benefits, may move up or down this ABC scale to satisfy the demands on its system. So, for instance, at rate class 5 under the G schedule, the amount of money required to sustain that system is comparable only if the two systems are in the G schedule. However, as we saw, there is a higher percentage required when you have higher benefits. So actually, the higher benefits section may be one or two schedules higher, depending on what the situation is. So you'd be comparing 570 with, say, 825 or 925. Rod, you have some graphs and things, I think, show that. I also, before we leave today, we think it very premature indeed to think about the effective date of this act, but if any. We do have some serious concerns that Burke Finley would like to address concerning some problems we have with that.
But I think I and some of the other members of the committee had some other problems and questions with choosing the effective dates of various portions of the bill also, so we probably want to ask that.
So, Rod, if you could, and maybe Bob or whoever would have on this.
Since we started with this, we had a couple of charts that we prepared here that have to do with what this shows. I think as Mr. Spear mentioned, this chart's valid if you're on the same rate schedule in terms of saying what the maximum number of dollars are that are going to be paid on any one person. But what this shows is that under the various proposals, you're not always going to be on the same rate schedule, and this is just for a relatively short run period, for the 7 years out into the future. And what we did was to check, assuming we get an equilibrium situation where we're running along at a standard rate of unemployment and a standard rate of economic growth, we checked to see what would be the long-range difference in the various proposals. So this one compares the committee and the sponsor proposal, and it says that 41% of the time you'd be on the same schedule, 54% of the time you'd be one schedule higher using the committee proposal, and 5% of the time you'd be two schedules higher using the committee's proposal. Then we compared the committee to the current, and it says 16% of the time you'll be on the same schedule, 57% of the time you'll be one schedule higher, 27% of the time you'll be two schedules higher. And then we also compared the sponsor and the current. And there we came out, and this seems a little strange that you'd ever be lower, but just the way they switch around in order to compensate for what's happening, there'd be 4% of the time you'd be one schedule lower, 32% of the time you'd be on the same schedule, and 64% of the time you'd be one schedule higher. And so the implication of that is that if you're going to try to use this chart in order to compare costs, you almost have to compare the cost on one schedule with the cost on the next schedule below it, or some fraction thereof. But right. You can't really get a comparison of the cost by assuming that you're on the same schedule.
Is that 27% that the committee proposal, I presume that's what the $200 limit at, is that 27%, is that related to the, I think you showed out of the next 5 years, 1 year during which the, on this chart last Tuesday, that you said there was about 1 year in which you'd expect the employer and employee contribution rates to be higher under the committee substitute as opposed to the governor's bill. And is that related to this 27% figure you're coming up with now?
Is this the figure you're referring to?
Yes.
Now, this is a comparison of the committee and the current.
Oh, I see. Okay.
This is the committee and the sponsor. And what this really says is that 59% of the time, you're going to be on a higher schedule using the committee plan as opposed to the sponsor plan. And that's why I say that you can't really use this to get a feel for what the difference in costs are.
Yeah.
And that's the only point of this. This is a very long run point of view. Mm-hmm. We assume that we built up.
This is 8 years, you said? How many years?
Well, I was talking to this in terms of being a forecast. It's a forecast out for 7 years. Mercer County Road, 6 years. What this is, in terms of how we derived these, we assumed you get the fund backed up to an adequate level. So you've got your reserve multiple of 1.25. And then we looked at what the cost rate is under each of the proposals. And we looked at what tax schedule they would be in. And then we checked to see how often they would have to flip back and forth between cost schedules in order to keep the reserve at its level of adequacy. And this is what we came up with in terms of how often they'd be on the same schedule, how often they'd be on different schedules to maintain the reserve. Given a set of economic assumptions that are similar to what we're talking about here.
Well, on Tuesday when you showed us the graph for the reserve multiple, and of course that's the thing that tells us which schedule we're in. You know, this is, this is a really expensive schedule at the bottom and an inexpensive schedule at the top. It appeared that you were showing not much difference between current law, the committee substitute, and sponsor substitute, except that there would be one and a half years in which, in this foreseeable period, the next 4 or 5 years, in which the committee substitute would put us one schedule higher. I think I can't remember, 79 to 80 or something like that. Well, you haven't changed your view on your
this
chart,
this is still valid. What we're talking about there, though, isn't an equilibrium situation in the sense that there we're talking about building the reserve back up to a level of adequacy. Okay, we're saying this is what would happen after the reserve got built up to a level of adequacy, and if you chugged along under uniform economic growth. You can't really look at this infer from this what the long-run impact's going to be.
Well, then this right here really would only address a period after we got up to this black line, which according to your chart is not going to be happening until 1984 anyway.
That's correct. This is the long-run impact of the various proposals.
Okay, but say for the next 5 years, it's probably more instructive for us to look at this, I think. Certainly
this is something you have to live with in the long run. And so I would say that you're better off to look at what the long run impact is going to be rather than what the short run impact is going to be for planning purposes. In order to the immediate concern, I think, is this, because the immediate concern is always whether the fund is going to remain solvent or not.
You know, maybe it's just my view, but I would think that if we look at the next 5 years, we're lucky in the long run. You're talking about is so long that there'll be unforeseen economic and political considerations we can't see now. Legislature can always change the law in 1985, 6, or 8 or something. Probably will. Go ahead with your presentation.
Well, that's all I had to say. It was just the point that I think that we've been a little bit misleading in presenting this. It's easy to look at this and infer that this is a cost comparison, and it's not. And that's the only point that we're trying to make.
Well, the thing that is the cost comparison that I find most valuable is this chart here that shows the years. And this tells us which column we're in on that chart. And
that's exactly what this one does as well.
And that between this and that chart, we can see what the cost comparisons are expected to be. Because this determines the schedule we're in, and then we look to see the schedule on that table.
Yeah, I think if he is that in conjunction with this, or actually this is a probably better, more accurate representation of that syndrome, showing how one will be in a higher schedule than the other. I think if this was the one that everyone was looking at in conjunction with this, then we'll see they all look kind of about the same. So that must mean that we can get twice as much benefits for only $150 more in taxes, which is not true. All this says is the organism is designed to go out and get what it needs to pay for what it puts out. So all of them are going to follow this line. The fund doesn't go bankrupt. It doesn't say anything about the businesses contributing or anything and whether they're bankrupt or not. If we're going to go give $50,000 to everybody, these lines would still be the same as long as these schedules were moving up sufficiently to pay everybody $50,000. So this again is the fund taking care of itself and has little to do with its individual taxes.
Did you have
last time you asked for the projected or proposed committee substitute with a $240 maximum benefit, and basically all we've done is add that on to the graphs you saw last Tuesday, and we also reduced them, and I'll pass these around as I talk about them so you have an opportunity to get a closer look. First two are the benefits and contributions, and the color, of course, is still the same. The blue one is the governor's proposal. The red one is the committee proposal with $200 maximum.
You only have these copies, that's all?
Right. I thought maybe you could pass it around. We didn't have time to make any more.
Oh, okay. I don't know if our color zero is working over across the street on that.
We asked about that. They said it would be an hour before they could get them. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just pass these around as people listening to your presentation circulating.
Okay. The only thing we added on then was the green line, which is the $240 maximum on the proposed committee bill. One thing that we did find, the only area we found completely through all of our cost estimates again since we was in such a rush last time, the only thing we did find wrong was when we calculated the percent difference increase from the current benefit structure to the governor's bill. Last time I said that would be 39% increase in cost. We included one figure too many in our base, so I ended up making it too low. It's actually 51%. And with the committee substitute or proposal, $200 maximum was 72% for no dependents and 78% increase with dependents. And with the $240 maximum, it'd be a 94% increase with no dependents and 102% with dependents. I believe if it's kind of small print, but I reduced it on that. That's all written on that one. And again, contributions, that's the green line again is the one we added on. Is there any questions on these two?
Those percentages don't change the actual numbers.
No.
I mean, it's just...
Everything else is stated precisely the same. Okay, and the next two is the fund balance and the reserve multiple. Again, we just added on the green line. It's a little difficult to see on the reserve multiple, even on the reduction, but it's, of course, causing the reserve multiple to stay a little bit lower than all the other proposals just because of the increased cost.
Yeah,
and same with the fund balance.
Shows up easier here than it does there on the reserve multiple. Yeah, just with the 240 max and no other changes, you show quite a difference in where the reserve multiple is.
Right. Oh, I forgot to mention, we didn't plot. You asked about freezing at Schedule G, and we didn't plot that on these. We did put them on the handouts there, though. The dashed lines are the using the same colors for the comparable bills as if you froze the schedules on those different proposals. And we run the dotted line.
Frozen in the same way they are in the bills.
Right, right. It's Schedule G for 2 years.
Oh, the dashed lines and the individual colors.
Right. For instance, the green dotted line would be the $240 maximum on the committee proposal. It corresponds to this being the only difference is we froze Schedule G for 2 years. It does show that it responds back fairly rapidly after freezing it, but it's at the expense of some pretty high increases in taxes in a very short period of time. But it still stays solvent. Is there any questions on these then?
Okay, and then finally we just for a comparison's sake, get an overview or picture of the entire system. The black one is the current law, and this just shows the different cost comparisons of the different proposals.
What is the...
Oh, I see. You've got the graph here.
How are you costing, making comparison benefit costs between, say, the same proposal with or without benefits? Does that mean the cost of any one check or how much it's increasing on the average or what? What are we really looking at here?
Between the with dependents and without dependents?
Yeah.
Okay, with dependents, it's just a little bit lower. For instance, in this case, the total cost of the program increased over the current law would be an additional 73% increase in cost, and this one would be 78%. So it adds 5% to your cost. With
oh, dependents. You're saying as though the bill did or did not have a dependent allowance?
Right, right.
Oh.
So rather than a 73% increase in cost, if you include the dependence allowance provision, it would increase an additional 5% to 78% increase in cost over the current law.
And those are costs to the fund.
Right. They're both their benefit costs and what you have to pay out of the fund.
There would be substantial administrative costs added.
Yeah, this is the only thing we've addressed here is the fund and tax implications.
Well, you're saying benefit costs, but that's cost to the fund. It seems to me that it's still more instructive to, as far as we find out how it affects employee and employer contributions, to look at your graph on the reserve multiple, see where we are, and then look at the table in that column to find out what those figures are.
Okay, to me it's a little more easier to look at this because that graph that shows which schedule you're going to be on has a lot of things that goes into that. For instance,
I know that, but you see, we're politicians and we have people who ask us how much money are they going to pay when they write a payroll or give an employee contribution. So that's what we really are interested in.
Okay, well, I think this is the truest reflection here then. Because over this period of time that we projected, 6 years, this is what the cost will be compared to.
I'm sorry, saying then the person can multiply his present taxes by 78% and come up with a figure then?
By 178%, because you have a current lot of fund anyway. It's an additional 78%. Okay? And these really represent the cost of the program over that six-year period we projected. In that reserve multiple graph, you will see that the rates may stay pretty much the same, but if you recall, the committee proposal has a higher tax base. That the costs, the reason it still operates on higher schedules occasionally, 59% of the time, is because the cost difference between what you get as additional revenue from that higher, little bit higher tax base and what you're paying out in benefits is still different. You're paying out more benefits than that additional tax base will generate. That's why you shift to higher tax schedules to fund that.
So to me, this is the clearest picture, is it just an absolute comparison. So you're looking only at benefit cost. That really is what sets all your tax rates, because these have to be paid for.
Maybe it just comes from having done my own payroll, but I still prefer looking at the other table, but I guess it's just a matter of opinion.
Okay.
You want to find out what percentage you're actually going to take out this month.
Yeah.
You guys tried to develop some information on of a specific nature, but again, using this organism analogy, you know, different organisms go after its prey, so to speak, in different ways. For instance, one bill taxes, using fangs, taxes on 25,000, the other one on 19. And so, depending on what kind of an employer you are, either one of those funds would operate differently on your payroll. You might explain some of the difficulties you have.
Bill asked us, starting even the first day we got working on this project, to come up with some examples of what a given employer would have to pay. And it's almost impossible to present a case where, you know, an employer, we can give you a lot of hypothetical cases, but there's so many differentials. Either an employer could have everybody that it was working for him over the tax base, in which case these absolute differences would apply. Or you could have somebody that's under the present tax base, all of his employees under the present tax base, and he'll see he'll see a decrease in his taxes. Because with a higher tax base, you're going to shift down to lower rate schedules.
So this average employer you're talking about may not be able to walk down the street and find one.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And we didn't want to present anything that was going to confuse it even more, because there's so many different considerations. We just couldn't take them all into account in one given example.
Could an individual who knows what his payroll is now look at that schedule and the one with the yellow squares telling what rate you're in and figure out what his taxes would be?
Yeah, they could. Provided that our economic picture comes out as we have painted it, they can tell exactly what it's going to be.
Well, you know, the hand-to-mouth small business employer normally looks to see what his payroll is going to be this month or this quarter, and he'll get his ulcers over what happens next November when next November comes along. That's why I still prefer looking at your table over here, because then I can tell the guy what he'll be telling his bookkeeper he'll be taking out as a percentage each month or each pay period.
Right,
and that's something that is something that means something.
Yeah, that's entirely valid.
Maybe that's not true of oil companies or RCA or something like that. Any other questions from members of the committee? Mr. Hayes?
I've got a question on whether or not there's any, not on this particular chart, but has anything been prepared on the committee substitute that has a proposed weekly benefit maximum of $200? To show how each person in each wage category would benefit. We have I'm looking at a table here that was based on the $240 in this table, it shows that a guy making $10,000 gets about a 50% increase in benefits, and a guy making $25,000 or more gets about a 300%. And how does that, do you have anything worked up to show how the new committee substitute would work? Who's getting the majority of these benefits?
Yeah, where's that?
Does
benefits?
That have the 200 and 240 on it?
Yeah, because the 200 is the same as the 240.
The 200 is the same as the 240.
The schedule is the same if it has up at 240.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't show.
What is the blue? Is that the 240?
The 200. 200 is the dotted line.
Okay. Should come up next one. This is a comparison of existing bills, our bill, and other unknown bill. Well, it isn't a bill yet. So.
Basically, what we've done is we've graphed the existing law as though you had no dependents, and then with one, two, or three dependents. Okay, the blue line going up through here is the committee substitute versions. Okay, if you pick your 200 maximum, okay, your 200 maximum, I'm sorry, stops right there, and no one would get above that. If you go to the 240, or the 50% of the average weekly wage, your graph will continue on up to that point. The red line is, I guess we reverse these on this chart. The red line is the governor's proposal with a maximum of 150, and that shows a general change, but we don't have percentages. We could have them to you.
Shows that, if I'm reading that right, it shows the greatest rate of increase occurs from about 8,000 to 20, up to the cutoff point. From there to the right is your greatest rate of increase.
Right.
Because if you look at that, it looks like, if you try to make that a curve, it looks like it's flattening out. But it's
the governor's proposal,
but it really
yes, isn't. Flattens out to 150.
Yeah, but
existing law flattens out right at
8,500
is, well, that's all you make get maximum benefit. You flatten out. If you make $50,000, you're still making this benefit. All the bills are comparable to the current law up to about that area, maybe let's say up here to 10,000. The differences in the benefit structure obviously are in here. Somebody making $10,000 and above is doing considerably better under the proposal than ours. And then, as Janet pointed out, the two, if we cut down the benefits, really just, this is the difference. The difference between the 200 and the 240 is in this area here.
So if you plotted a curve of a rate of increase, that thing would flop over and you'd have a steep climb as you go over 10.
I'm sorry, if you did what?
If you plotted a curve indicating rate of increase.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Too early for calculus, Joe.
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman, I think this is, one of the problems. Perhaps you don't want to get into it now, but I think this is one of the problems we need to address in this committee: is where the greatest rate of increase is going to occur. Seems that people that are making $10,000 or less are having the greatest problem of putting food on the table, but yet they're getting the lowest rate of increase. And I question whether or not we shouldn't be taking a look at it.
Well, it's not so much they're getting a lower rate of increase. It was our intention to, in other words, flatten the curve a little bit this way, rather than, you know, take the whole thing up like this.
I'm talking about the committee substitute, not the sponsor substitute. Committee substitute with a $200 limit gives the greatest benefit in terms of increased benefits, percentage of increase, to the highest wage earner.
What we were trying to do, and we haven't really put any primary emphasis on benefit adequacy or any of these subjects because there has been no other bill introduced, but we did pass out a graph, Rudy did, I think, showing where the benefits went. And we were trying to think of some way to combine this chart with that chart. I think that's what you're kind of driving at. In other words, where do these things go? I don't know what that chart, or if it's even possible to make. I assume it must be possible.
Well, I hate to do this to the committee and the department. A couple of the members of the committee have mentioned this problem to me, and in response to their questions, I prepared some suggested changes for the figures that are in the committee substitute for the lower income ranges, and that's being duplicated right now. Now, that means, of course, that we have to ask the department to cost that out. I don't know how much of a change it will have because they've already pointed out to us that the most costly portion of the entire schedule is for the people in the higher income brackets, and of course that will not change. That'll still be for those who make more than, whose base period is more than $4,000 to $4,500, it would remain the same as in the proposed CS up to the ceiling of $200. And after trying to talk to people in the committee and find out what individuals are, the concerns they do have, and of course that was mentioned as much, that and the fact that we shouldn't go above the 200, I think, is mentioned more than anything else.
There are some problems which...
Just a moment.
With Doris, well, In other words, there are reasons why we have why we don't make just a flat line across here and give everyone the same benefit amount. And I don't. Can you tell me exactly, not exactly, generally what your suggestions would do to this?
Well, I have the suggestions right here. Actually, it's a rewrite on the entire schedule showing the 200 max. And here, I'll do a couple of these.
Mr. Chairman? What is the, in your opinion, what is the philosophy of the unemployment compensation plan? Is it to provide a maintenance level so that when you're unemployed you can at least eat, or is it to, in other words, is the theory that a guy that makes over $25,000 eats more, or what's the theory there?
Give a discussion on it. There are different philosophies on what the program is supposed to do.
What's the stated philosophy in the book?
The stated philosophy in the book of unemployment insurance is that it's supposed to make a wage replacement to meet the necessary essentials of life.
Okay.
That is a simplicity. That is all. That's
the
what
chart
it's
doesn't
to do
that though.
In what aspect?
Why should a guy, the basic necessities of life are food, shelter, and clothing, I guess.
Well, of course, it depends on what this man's income has been and what, you know, if he's had a stay for 10, 5 years or whatever, he's maintained a certain standard of living, and his necessities of life, true, maybe a little, they're more in the urban area than they are in a rural area, but this is the purpose of unemployment insurance to a wage replacement, not to go out and buy a Uniflight boat or something like that, but so he can take and continue to live and not just exist.
I'll offer another comment about that, and that is, I would assume that somebody who doesn't expect that he's going to be unemployed, he commits himself to paying a certain level of a mortgage and installment payments on consumer goods he's purchased and all of that, and then finds himself unemployed, and is pretty much stuck with those payments, otherwise he's going to lose his house and a whole bunch of things like that. And I don't know the people in Alaska who are even in that middle range, making between, say, $10,000 and $20,000, are not horribly wealthy and are not making great, you know, extravagant excursions into high life.
Mr. Chairman, as much as half of the funds go out to the state, about half, I would assume that it makes it possible for those people in the high earning category to take a vacation all winter. The guy who makes $10,000 or less should stick it out in Alaska. Try to keep body and soul together. A guy in a high earning category apparently can afford to go to Florida. So he must be able to go down to Florida and make his payments in Florida, pay hotel room, and if you say he has all these encumbrances, he also must be making those at the same time. But, if half of the wages are going to the South 48, I don't think your argument would hold water.
Well, if you're arguing in favor of the sections that are in both the committee substitute and the administration bill, that we should attempt this method of reducing the outside benefits and see if we can make it on a conformity hearing, I agree with you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a statement, of course. One thing, this is one of the reasons in the governor's proposal, we were reducing benefits so when they went out to another state, they would not be drawing their 240 or 150, whatever the committee settles on. They would be drawing more of a benefit that's comparable to the state they're going in. And of course, the way the law is written, a person is eligible for unemployment insurance, and this is by federal statute, by our statute, if he becomes unemployed through no fault of his own and is able and available for work. Now, this is not a philosophy, this is law, both federal and state. And so we do have the fact that it's a wage replacement or a percent of wage replacement. We still have the fact that he is eligible for unemployment insurance benefits, whatever it's set at, when he becomes unemployed through no fault of his own. So with the governor's proposal, and of course the committee substitutes, you would be reducing benefits to this guy that Mr. Hayes says goes to Florida, living pretty high on the hog, which if you take a look at the benefits that we would pay in Florida, they're not exceptionally high or anything, either in the committee substitute or the governor's proposal.
Oh, you're reminding me of something. I've had so many meetings on this, I can't remember whether this has been brought up lately, but concern was expressed to me about the way in which we do that. That is, that in any case, according to any method of doing it, there's a floor on the payment made to somebody outside had better not get below what they would get from that state in any event. I'm not sure that's the case in all hypothetical situations under the bills as we have.
You know, in our proposal,
you say
they
that,
definitely...
I'm afraid I'd forget it if I didn't say it right now. Go ahead.
No, in the governor's proposal, they definitely would receive, in some cases, even though they might be eligible for the maximum in Alaska, they could be received lesser amounts in the state of Washington or in various other states. Some are equal to or lesser of in the committee substitute.
No, I'm talking about to make sure that we don't pay them less than they would get. Were they drawing the local benefits?
That is correct. I think I'd have Janet respond to that or Bill, but I think we do in some cases pay a little bit, pay less than
that
they would get under normal
circumstances. That's the thing that bothers me about going into the conformity hearing. I think maybe we better fool
the problem with a little bit. I think I was the one that suggested the floor. The problem with it, my administrators tell me, is that it would be, you'd almost have to do two monetary determinations on the person to do that. And so we're at a position here of discussing with Ron and looking at some what the actual differences would be in the other states and trying to decide whether to go for all or nothing or forget the whole thing. I think there are a couple of things that suggest themselves as I'm looking at these bills that suggested by Mr. Hayes' statement. The problem is you're trying to cover all kinds of people in all kinds of different situations with one system. Bert, you might want to say, for instance, why we don't just pay a flat rate to everyone, because obviously somebody with five kids out in Queflock or something can use the money. If he makes $7,200 a year, he's entitled to a relatively smaller amount of benefits. The other problem is my wife maybe makes $7,200 a year, and she's equally eligible. And you know, there's a real question of need there. And again, using the organism analogy, do these benefit rates self-create demand? For instance, when we went off of the $20 interstate schedule and went up to the regular benefits, we had a 300-400% increase in demand in interstate benefits. So there are all kinds of problems trying to I'm not saying myself that unemployment insurance is really the program. Maybe it's ill-designed to really meet the problems that everyone's trying to meet. If somebody is making a substandard wage and living in substandard housing, he needs help, and he needs public help, perhaps. The question is, should we be doing it through an insurance program, or should we be doing it through some other program? But why, Bert, don't we pay a flat rate? And why is that inconsistent with...
I think that, you know, when we talked about dependency allowance and some of those other things before, and the whole idea is an insurance program based on... And this is the employee and the employer contribution is a premium. And you get in a total social aspect and not an insurance need if you say everybody that is going to get $100 a week, regardless of what they earn. And this is not the purpose of the program. It was never set up for that purpose, and it's prohibited. It's not prohibited by law. We could take everybody $150 a week, and even if they only earned $5,000. But then we're going to be paying them more in benefits than they made in earnings. And this really defeats the program and is a total disincentive to work. And just does not make much good common sense.
From a social standpoint, these scales maybe could be argued should be exactly the opposite. The higher benefits should maybe be going to the lower people. The problem, I guess, is what Chairman Brown brought up. These people have a different standard of living, and they're trying to maintain it. And when they become involuntarily unemployed, they've made more money, they collect a higher benefit. And I suppose really what we're talking about is a complete either scrapping the system and going to a new system or supplementing with other systems. We're just saying that under the present insurance type system we have, some of the problems just maybe are not very addressable.
Is this is this table essentially the same as the sponsor substitute for the table?
For the range of $4,500 to $16,000, yes, it is. There are increases in the range from zero to $4,500, and of course it maxes out at $16,000 because the maximum is $200.
Very little difference, though, as I, for instance, $2,000 to $2,500, you go up $10 a week, I see, roughly. So the difference between your new proposal and the sponsor substitute chart is maybe $5 or $10 a week in the lower categories.
Well, that's true, Mr. Hayes. We always get into problems that if you start getting your average weekly wage such that the person is making substantially more money on unemployment than they were in their base period of their job, that they have the disincentive to work. We're right at, or maybe even a little over that, with some of those figures now. We could increase it more. I would have less problem with that probably than some other members of the committee. Have anything more from the department? I know that.
There's an opportunity here to talk a little bit about the average weekly wage and benefit amounts, but I think maybe until we see a bill, and I think we would reserve our comments there. But there is something on the effective date that Mr. Finley would like to address.
Okay, yes. Before we say this, this last proposal that was passed out has about a $2 difference from two of the wage ranges. It is slightly lower than the sponsor substitute for the range, I think by about $1 or $2, something like that. If you're at about $1,400 a base range, or I think this is about $1,800, the difference is less than $5 a week. I think it's more like $2 or $3. It provides benefits for people in lower income brackets than does the sponsor substitute. It starts at the 750 figure, like the committee substitute does, and it provides, of course, substantially higher benefits than the current law. And I think if we were raising much more, then we'd be getting in a position of paying people substantially more on unemployment than they would were in their own base period when they were working. And even though that sounds weird, there are some justifications for doing that in a few cases, but it's awfully hard to sell to the legislature and the governor. Mr. Finley, go ahead.
What I would like to comment on is the effective dates on this bill. For the first thing, all of our cost proposals that have been presented by our departments are based on the effective date of taxes and benefits becoming effective January 1st, 1979. There's no cost proposals based on the benefits, for example, becoming effective as of July of 1978. On the taxing side, of course, by our existing law, we set our tax base for 1 year. And so the tax has to remain in effect until January 1st of 79. Also, any other provisions of the tax would not take effect until January 1st of 79. Benefits, with the interstate restriction we're proposing, there is no way administratively we can have this programmed into the computer and operating by July 1st of 1978. The bill is a very good chance, we're at the 1st of May, may not be passed out before the 1st of June.
I hate to admit it, but that might be true.
This is an assumption, and in 30-day time, it would be an impossibility, even without the interstate restrictions, of getting the bill by July 1st. Probably without the interstate restrictions, we could have a bill effective October 1st. But with the interstate restrictions, due to the complexity of the computer, and the fact that the computer we have is pretty well loaded and is not as efficient as it could be, we would experience nothing but extreme problems. And I think you gentlemen received many calls during January.
Don't leave Sally out, please.
Pardon? Sorry.
I'm used to it.
But you know, we experienced some extreme problems in January, February this year of benefits not being paid on a timely basis from many constituents, and I'm sure you all received calls. And if we tried to implement a program in raising benefits before January 1st, I think that would be just the tip of the iceberg we had of problems, because there's just no way to get the computer program, get all of the bugs out of it, go back to all the states and get, we've got to compute all their average annual wages in all of the program areas. It's just an impossibility, because it has to be programmed to the point that if a claimant goes to Hawaii and files a claim, and the next week he's in California, and next week in Oregon, and next week in Washington, and back to Alaska, all of these variables and everything has to be built in, and it's a magnitude of a computer complex problem. I have some of my system people here that any technical questions or anything you'd like to ask on the data processing situation. But we feel is no way with this bill coming out, say, by June 1st, it's going to take at least 4 to 5 months so we can have an efficient, effective program with the interstate restrictions. If the interstate restrictions are not put in, then we can implement by October 1st. And on the tax,
You said if you were to leave the same methodology for the interstate payments, at least for the present, you could implement by when?
If we don't reduce interstate benefits, you know, and we just pay everybody outside what we're paying in Alaska, then we can implement by October 1st.
What mechanical difficulties or there are logistical difficulties would there be if the sections with regard to the interstate benefits were effective January 179?
Well, then you would be paying anybody filing a new claim, say, to you, the rest, if it went into effect as of January 1st.
That's a policy problem. I said, what are the logistical problems within the department that you were talking about?
There'd be a lot of administrative come January 1st of trying to adjust these claims.
You'd have 6 months to know that that is. No, that is that their claims levels would change January 179. What I'm seeking right here is we got people in my district, for instance, that show, I guess the department shows, and Sally's insured unemployment of well over 20%, and we know that you add those who have already gone past their extended benefits are no longer insured, it's much, much higher. And it's an economically depressed area and other economically depressed areas. I don't like the idea of paying people out of state more than most of us. We have a consensus. One of you think we do have a consensus on that, than we think they should be getting. But if it makes a difference as to whether or not people are going to get any increase in benefits based on get a 1973 schedule for all the rest of this year, I'd be interested in the idea of having the change with regard to interstate benefits effective later, so you have time to gear up for that, prepare it to your computer programming, and still get benefits to Alaska to where it is.
Okay, number one, then again, our forecasts could change as to the cost. If we start paying these high benefits as of July 1st, because you're going to have 6 months period in there.
Well, it sounded to me like we couldn't make July 1st anyway, what you're saying.
Well, I don't think
September 1 or
October 1 would be the date if we didn't have the interstate in. But now, there again, of course, we wouldn't want to go back and try and raise a man's claim that he's already established a benefit amount and then have to take and adjust his claim and bring it up to whatever the new law is as of October 1. We would want all benefits established on or after October 1 would go in at the new rate. We again then have an administrative problem, which is pretty horrendous when you start having to make retro payments or change in the middle of the stream on the amount of the benefit amount. This again is a computer problem. And we very seriously do have problems with our existing computer. It's not. It's just a piece of hardware that is too loaded with what we need in the department.
You don't have a nice tape, you can just go and program somebody else's computer that's so faster than you need it.
No, sir, we do not.
We'd like that.
In that regard, Mr. Chairman, I might mention that Mr. Brown has been kind of the lead person on looking at these alternatives. He'll be leaving tomorrow. And just to let the committee know what our logistical problems are immediately in considering this bill. Of course, our bill was developed over a period now of nearing 2 years, and all of these calculations and so forth were made. Every time someone throws out, well, how about if we do this, how about if we do that, we've got four people working, sometimes all night, for 2 days in between these hearings. And frankly, we don't, outside of Janet, maintain a full-time actuary position that, since legislation of this type only comes up, you know, every 5 years or so. So what I'm saying is essentially that any further suggestions about what do we do if we raise benefits or lower them or raise taxes, our response time is going to necessarily have to be much slower than it has been in the last week or so. We just don't have the manpower to redevelop a whole new model every time we...
I understand that, and I'm afraid the legislative political process is such that sometimes this sort of thing does happen. I hope at least that this is the last proposal we're going to make. We're trying to accommodate concerns of people in the legislature and other people and the public interest is perceived in 60 different ways, I guess. But the problem is that you're going to have, of course, if once a bill leaves this committee, it goes to another committee, and they're going to be doing the same thing to it. And it's going to go to two committees in the Senate if it passes the House. So I presume that you're planning ahead in that regard. Of course, once it's out of this committee, I don't have much to say about
all I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, is we just can't squeeze blood out of a turnip.
I understand.
If they say we want to do something different, it's just going to take longer.
Well, the concerns that members of the committee and other legislators expressed to me, they didn't like going above 200 on the max, although they understood some of the reasons for the proposal went somewhat above the governor's bill. Other members of the legislature expressed to me the concerns that the low end of the scale was not high enough, which is where this last change is. It's been prepared. It's a complete schedule in two pages. Now, I can't ask for miracles, but if there's any way you can at least give us a rough notion, you know, or as well as you can iterate the past and improve on a rough notion between this meeting and 3 o'clock this afternoon. We are going to reconvene at 3, and hopefully, I don't know how heavy the load is over in Resources Committee, but at least Steele and Smith from Resources, and then Alvin can join us when he finishes chairing that meeting. Any other, I guess there aren't too many more conflicts. I asked that earlier in that meeting here. I can't predict, but I certainly hope this is the last proposal in this committee. Mr. Hayes.
I'm just going to ask them if they have this set up on a computer.
You mean the schedule, the revised
schedule? Do you have any kind of a computer program where you can put different variables in and get different answers? Or are you doing this all by...
All manual calculation, is it not?
No, we have part of the center programmable calculator, and of course we've done most of the basic groundwork, and this we should get it up by 3 o'clock, no problem.
The only thing I was going to say is that I certainly hope this is the last proposal too, because I'm not anywhere able to say that I favor any proposal. I prefer to just leave the status quo and work on this next year, especially taking into consideration the comments of this gentleman in the table regarding the time frame, that if nothing can be done by the effective date of January 1, 1979, your concerns of doing good for people in Fairbanks seems to be out the window. And rather than go in and do minor surgery in an operation that needs major surgery, letting an organism run rampant without antibiotics from the legislature. I just think that we ought to get out of the business of biology and get to the business of economics and unemployment insurance. I think he's so confused that he's now throwing biological terms at us because he's run out of other terms to try to explain where he's going and what he's trying to do. So I think that we're so fully confused that we can't make a decision.
Well, I hope that's better than that, Mr. Anderson.
Just want to make another final comment. I notice that we've got all the Department of Labor people around here, and I just read in the paper that a warrant is to be served on a pipeline worker, Lewis Woods, who invoked the state's local hire law and got the heck beat out of him.
A warrant's going to be served? I haven't seen that.
You know, it's the guy that beat up Lewis
Woods. I saw what that one.
And he's the guy that did it is gone, but the price you pay for invoking the local hire laws if you get beat up by Oklahomans. I don't know what the state's doing about that. The other thing is, we got this Collier thing up in Kenai, and the state labor, Department of Labor says that we have no jurisdiction because the plant was built after the law was passed. So, you know, those people up there are hollering, and nobody's really obviously can do anything about it. I don't know what they're going to do. We got minorities up in Anchorage there that are complaining about their inability to get contracts from the from Anchorage, and apparently this is a problem that is not only with the municipality of Anchorage, but it also is a problem with state contracts. That minorities are having difficulties getting contracts, and the Anchorage Times reacted to that complaint. They said that. What's the matter with these people? You mean tell me that anytime anybody wants a contract, they're going to have to make sure that 15% of the contractors are minorities? Well, that's something the legislature's going to have to take action on. Then we have hiring practices. I read in the Daily News here.
These are all
labor and management related.
I realize they are.
I just want to make the statement.
Don't have much to do with House Bill 550.
I'm
going to let you finish your comments in a moment, but I don't want to go into all of that subject matter now. I'll let you finish your comments, but I'll also hope that the members of the Department of Labor who are involved in those things will stay after the meeting and talk to you about it.
Okay, but anyway, these people have been making some broad-scale statements on whether or not they ought to get into the sociology of unemployment insurance, whether or not dependents ought to be considered, whether or not this is the vehicle for solving the state's economic problems. Okay, well, I am addressing economic problems in my statements, and I have as much right to make those statements as these gentlemen do. You've given them an awful lot of latitude. So anyway, I'm going to read this very short statement here. In your Saturday paper, under our views, was an article, Bias in State Jobs. It was very well written. There wasn't any need for a legislative committee to be appointed. As far as I'm concerned, to discover that the state of Alaska is biased in its hiring practices. By being a black male that has lived in Alaska since 1963, I have been aware of this for a number of years. It doesn't stop at the state hiring practices. It is also biased in the court systems, as I have been a victim of the Alaska court system for a number of years also. There are no black judges, lawyers, or prosecutors. There is no way that at the present time a black defendant can get justice in the court systems. The court system is all part of the state, so it stands to reason that if there is bias in their hiring, what it must be in the court systems as well. It would be very interesting for a committee to do a report on the court system to compare the time given to blacks along with the crime and the time given to whites. When I speak of blacks, there is to include other minorities also. This practice starts at the top, the federal government, as goes all the way down to the bottom. To me, it would be the same thing as asking a dog, are you a dog? He will not see anything wrong with being a dog. I will agree with you 100%. It is highly likely that the current trend will continue. If they did start an affirmative action program, they would be made up of all whites, or the majority of those people would be whites. I do not expect you to print this letter, but I feel better with myself just expressing how I feel about the situation. After all, this is the land of the free and the home of the brave. It's signed by a gentleman named Davis Stone. And I just think that we're just spinning our wheels here. We've got a greater problem than this bill is ever going to be able to address, and this gentleman is correct. We're not addressing a social work or a social welfare program. We're talking about unemployment benefits, and I don't appreciate the interjection of biological terms to try to explain a point on unemployment insurance benefits. If you cannot express yourself in a more informative manner to this committee, then you should learn how to utilize the terminology of unemployment insurance a little bit more effectively. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
matter of fact, a lot of the things you just mentioned, other legislation, including one bill that's really still in this committee, which we will be
looking at. But just points that I just wanted to raise, because I see department officials sitting here, and it seems to me that there ought to be in other parts of the state attending to their jobs.
By the way, Mr. Correct, the guy who wrote the letter to the, one of my office mates is a little bit deeper shade than I am. He also writes my payroll and determines what the unemployment compensation is. Withholding this from the secretary.
The chairman, I know you don't want to...
Well, I'd like to find out what the other members of the committee here about saying we can.
Getting back to you, you're talking about four to six months would be the cost to get the thing in
for the bills as they're written right now, yes.
I don't understand a whole lot about computer hardware or software or whatever. Is this a time limitation due to the fact that it's physically impossible to do it, or is it due to the fact that you don't have adequate staff and funding to do it?
I think there's two things in there. Number one, we do have a limited amount of staff that we can devote to this. You know, we probably have two or three people that we can devote to this. And second is, due to the complexity of this interstate benefit, and make sure that every variable is put into this thing. It's not something you can do in a 2-3 month period, because you've got to write the programs, you've got to test them, you've got to debug them, you've got to get all the information from all the other states to their average annual wage in this type of situation. And say if we had a dozen people to do the job, we could probably do it in 3 months.
If the fiscal note for this bill included additional funding either for temporary hires or contractual money to take care of that, then you could update the...
I would like to contact our chief of data processing, because I think we may have a problem in hiring systems analysts and programmers within Juneau. Marcia, are we still having a problem getting data processing people within the state to go to work? Are they still short of individuals? Say if they give us enough money to hire 3 or 4 more people, could we get qualified systems and analyst people aboard?
You can get qualified systems and analyst people, but you wouldn't have people with the background in unemployment insurance. It would take a period of time to bring them up to speed on the road.
I suppose there's also the possibility of combining that with contractual services. The point is that I guess we're not just talking about unemployment benefits, we're talking about the economy, and every one of those dollars ends up getting spent somewhere in the economy and businesses where they might otherwise have people buying it.
Well, you know, we bust our butts, whatever they come out with, and I'm not trying to be negative and say, God, we don't want to do it, because we do want to do it. I'm trying to look at the real world.
At least two or three or some number of us would like to find some way of getting these benefits changed earlier than January 1. Now, if you can show us some way by this afternoon, even though the administration may not support that, we're just asking a mechanical question. If we would just suggest the policy decision, is there some way that we could do it through some combination of an increased fiscal note, an effective date of either September or October 1 or earlier, if we can do it with the increased fiscal note, and maybe postponing the change on interstate benefits until January 1. I'd really be interested. Mr. Hayes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say that I agree with the statements made by Representative Anderson regarding disposition of this bill. Further, like to say that I'm not going to vote to move this bill out of committee until the audit that I requested about 2 weeks ago is completed. And my further intention, as soon as legislative budget audit meets, which I understand is Monday, to request this audit, I've asked this committee, and I've suggested it to the department, and neither has responded. And until such time as this audit has been completed, I don't plan to vote this bill out of committee.
Well, to the extent it was possible for this committee to respond, it has responded, Mr. Hayes, but I just have to find out what you're doing by reading the newspapers. You never seem to tell me, Ms. Smith.
I'd just like to restate what I said the other day. I wish we could get on with this bill. There are some people that are very hungry. It starts right with the administration, who came down a year ago with a bill and asked us to wait. And we waited until this March before we could get started. And I really hate to see the people who are playing fair with this thing penalized while the rest of us get headlines. And I'm hoping we can do something. And it will go into effect once it is.
Mr. Kennedy, do you have anything further on this matter involving the effective date?
No, we will.
If you could give us some of that.
Come back with you at 3 o'clock.
Mr. Hayes?
Well, I think, in response to Sally's statement, I think there's been some statements made here to indicate this, to this committee that we may not get on with this bill. And I think that the direction has been set. What has to be done as far as the committee chairman is concerned, and we may very well not get on with it.
With all due respect, Mr. Hayes, I think the delay is coming from your corner in trying to put the fraud issue within the bill issue. And I think that we can look at the enforcement situation within this state. And here again, I'm repeating myself over a former meeting, but we don't seem to tend to beef up the investigation or enforcement. We tend to write new laws. And it's about time that we all learn how to back up the bills that we're sitting here writing. That's part of our duties and our responsibilities, and we neglect them because we're too busy writing new bills to get big headlines. You don't get a headline when you put in a new investigator.
Mr. Chairman, that's
Mr.
my point.
Just a moment, sir. That's one of the reasons why you should. I think you have in your folder VRU information from the budget with regard to investigators. I think we are going to be, after we finish working on the bill, we will be making recommendations to the finance committees and to the pre-conference committee asking them to increase those investigators because, believe it or not, I think there probably is a fraud problem. And Mr. Hayes has paid very little attention to my statements that we're going to look at the matter after the bill goes through the committee. And I'm not sure what his reasons have been, but it seems like every time I find out what he's doing in the fraud issue, it's by some piece of paper that he's circulated without even asking me the question or by picking up a copy of a newspaper. And it's strange to communicate with a member of the legislature who has an office halfway down the hall from mine or all the way down the hall by reading about it in the newspapers, but maybe that's the way he wishes to proceed.
Well, just so you know, Mr. Chairman, so it doesn't reach you as a surprise, I intend to, possibly maybe other members of this committee also, intend to request legislative budget and audit for an audit of the broad problem.
That's what I read in the Empire.
And,
Mr. McKenna, do you have a question?
No.
Furthermore, I agree with Representative Smith. We shouldn't just address ourselves to bills, but also to enforcement. And that's what I'm attempting to do. I want to hold this thing up until we can get something in the bill that addresses itself to protecting the fund. All we're talking about now is increasing the size.
Hold it up, period, sir.
Well, that's your opinion. Strong. I think it'll be may very well be determined that you held it up by inaction.
I don't think it's appropriate to be going into that level of conversation. Privately in the lounge or something like that, but for the lounge floor, I probably should not have made that comment on the record in the committee.
I, for one, would like to hear from some other people.
That's where I was trying to get to. I'm sure there's some other people here that wish to make some comments. Almost always, Mr. Carlson does, so I'll look for someone else first. Yes, please, if you would.
My name is Al Anderson. Representing Alaska Wheel Products, I have a suggestion. I suggested earlier about interstate benefits, how to handle that problem. It seems to me it's a relatively simple way to handle it, and that would be to require each and every claimant to check in person at a local employment office in order to be eligible for benefits at least once a month. The office could be located in Alaska.
Sounds good. Is there a conformity problem with that? I wish we could, can't we?
Why not?
I can respond partly to that. Our claimants and interstate claimants have to abide by the state law, which when they're filing. And some of them report every week to a local office, some every 2 weeks, and some every 6 weeks, depending on what that state law is. The majority of them are reporting at least every 2 weeks to a local office in the South 48.
What about the requirement that he mentioned? I have the feeling we have the question.
Well, I think he said report to a local office in
Alaska.
Oh, in Alaska, excuse me. Well, I know that this is an impossibility. This is a conformity issue that we would lose. This has been talked about before, and there's just no way that you can. You're saying you're prohibiting anybody from going outside the state and drawing any benefits at all.
No, we're not.
Or they're flying back and forth.
No. Well, anybody who wants benefits, come and get them.
Basically, the question is predicting the U.S. Department of Labor and the federal courts. Do you feel that they would find us out of conformity if we did that?
I personally feel they would, yes.
Although, Mr. Chairman, we did discuss the possibility of a minimum federal system with a supplementary state system, which
yes.
You might meet with some success on requiring that if you're going to participate in the state system that you actually show up at the office. However, that throws us back into that same conversation.
Well, when we've been talking about some awfully fancy numbers here, and the facts are that the average annual earnings of the Alaska worker, if you know what it is, it's $13,000 a year. If you're talking 19, you're talking 45, you're talking expensive figures, but truly, total average earnings of the Alaska worker, $13,000. But again, I would suggest to the committee that look at the suggestion very carefully. I think Mr. Spears is suggesting wonderful things, and you can require them to check in. I think it's a very good idea.
Just a moment, Kevin. You do know that in both versions of the bill, there are methods that would decrease the interstate benefits based on what the local wage would be, the average wage in those various states. So we'll be informed that is in both versions.
Well, I have some problems with conformity. This is supposed to be an insurance program. But, for instance, the fellow with the three dependents, he could go on an additional $30 per week. He doesn't pay any more unemployment insurance. His employer doesn't pay any more unemployment insurance, does he? It's supposed to be an insurance program. It's right there. So I think eight other states will approach it. That doesn't necessarily mean it.
Mr. Anderson?
Yeah, I certainly agree with your suggestion. I think it ought to be tried. I don't know. I haven't heard anybody tell me that it's illegal. I don't know why we haven't tried it before. I mean, if it has been tried before, what happened to it?
Well, it seems to me, you know, all right, here's an employed worker. If he wants to make it, he's entitled to them. He's earning them. Let him check in with local in Alaska employment office. If necessary, a designee who sends the road to do some work, so those people wouldn't have to travel. But those that were outside, if they want, will find the damage of the truck. Well, there's another thing. In many cases, we have husbands and wives who work in Alaska in the summertime. So they're hardly people that are going to not going to get $80 to get $180.
If I understand you correctly, you're saying that we're, based on previous testimony by the department, which indicated we're trying to keep a maintenance level here for people who suddenly find themselves not earning wages. That we're establishing a maintenance level based on one set of figures, when in fact. Maybe 19, 25,000, and in fact, we're looking at maybe an average weekly or average annual wage, whether of about 13. So we're really providing a maintenance level in excess of
We are in many, many cases there.
So, should be getting. Any other questions? Mr. McKenna?
Yeah, what's the 15,000 figure for?
I get that from the department of the building department.
We keep wages of every covered employer in the state. We have each employer report all the wages for all his workers each quarter. Okay, we throw those onto the computer, and each year we take a 20% sample of that entire group, which amounts to something like 250,000 workers in Alaska. Those workers include part-time people, people who come up for the summer to work, people who only work the summer, people who come up and work a day and decide they don't like working in Alaska or living in Alaska and leave any amount of time. Okay, those are all the covered workers in Alaska. Their mean average earnings for the year does come out to about $13,000. Okay, but you have a larger mix than what you would have, let's say, when we calculate our average annual wage for unemployment insurance program. We look at the number of jobs and divide that into the total wages to receive an average annual wage for one person holding a job for a year.
So,
it's federal.
Okay, and that's a federal method of calculating it, and all the states use that method. For our state, it's a little off because our people don't work a full year normally.
No, we don't. The majority of Alaskans don't work a full year, and that's the problem.
Any other questions?
So what you're saying that even the 13,000 per year is too high?
No.
No.
That's all right, an actual that's 13, mean. All right,
so that's weighting a person who works one day
with a person
with
who works,
person
a,
works
full
a full year.
The
25 is computing that person who works one day as though he'd worked the full year.
No, he gets combined with other people. If I have 365 people who work one day each, then their wages are combined to make one job.
I think the point is, though, that we're using a federal system in Alaska that simply doesn't fit Alaska, like a lot of other things don't fit Alaska.
Does it separate circles? Do you have seasonality?
System, and I think that at least I concluded that this year it's very difficult to jump out of the federal system, but I think one of the things we're going to be doing is asking the Legislative Council to perhaps work with Mr. Humphreys, who says somewhere in the room, and a few others over the interim, and work with the department to give us much more in-depth information on what the results would be of opting out of the federal system and having our own system, even though we have a state that does it, because one of the problems is you're getting, 3 or 4% or something on a fund that's $50 or $100 million, and that's an awful lot of bucks.
Could I ask one question on that? In calculating that 13,000 average, that person who works, let's say, 6 months at one job and 6 months at another and earns 10,000 in each case,
is earning $20,000.
But is computed as two people.
No. The computer runs, we went through this, we thought the computer was doing that, and it doesn't. The computer takes the Social Security number and takes all the wages earned and totals them up and gives me, if he works two jobs, $10,000 each, for $20,000 annual earnings.
But if you have two people, they're doing it as one.
Not
that's under the federal.
Under the federal.
Under the federal, yes.
The way it averages out.
But so that we would have, my purpose is to say that we would have an endless report.
I'm Don Dickey speaking for the Alaska State Chamber, and I won't belabor, I think, some of the confused take we have. I would concur with Mr. Nelson that...
His name is Mr. Anderson.
Nelson Anderson. I would concur that we have here, what we're doing is putting a Band-Aid on a problem that really needs major surgery. If I understood the Labor Department correctly and said that even if we pass something, we couldn't put it into gear until January. And I see nothing lost in trying to put these blocks together in that interim period. But before we go into that, I would point out a couple of things. That one, it was mentioned that this legislation has a further committee referral where full exposure discussion can take place. And from experience, that isn't so, because that committee is the Finance Committee. They will address themselves logically to one thing. How much is it going to cost the state? What it costs the employers does not relate to them or concern them. It concerns us all the hell. So it will not even be discussed. We've tried before, and they said, that's not our problem. So we should make that clear, that the problem will not be solved for us or resolved in the Finance Committee, and logically. I would point out on that one also that the federal government last year passed for the first time legislation which required...
Mr. Dickey, was that some of those members of the Finance Committee are also employers. Are you telling, and I think maybe one or two of them are members of your organization, are you telling me that they are not concerned about what their own contribution is?
No, I was saying they cannot. They tell us they cannot logically concern themselves with that subject because all they, as I understand it, have been told, all they involve themselves in is how much this costs the general fund. And it costs it nothing if the employer or employee are putting into it. It doesn't relate to them. But we do. It does relate for the first time because federal government last year passed legislation which said that the states mandatorily and all municipal governments have to cover their employees. And I don't know how thrilled they were about that. Some, but in some cases, I understand, like Anchorage, it may be a couple $1 million, probably $1 million in Fairbanks, $250,000 in towns like Ketchikan, so these smaller communities. Whatever happens here, if we go to the governor's fund, that's 39% to those folks, 68 or 69% to the, if you go to the higher level. So I merely point these things out. I think for me to, or anyone to be able to address ourselves to the bill would be illogical because I can't get my foot on the Ferris wheel fast enough. It's moving so fast that we haven't got a fix. But I would say when we do have a, our organization.
We're trying to slow the Ferris wheel down. Right. Maybe it'll even stop this afternoon.
I do feel that the, it is logical and timely that we look at some reasonable reviewed rates, and we'll be glad to address ourselves to them when we get the bill that is before you. I did want to call those two factors to your attention.
We're going to try to get those, that information this afternoon. Any questions from the committee, Mr. Dickey? Mr. Officer, I give you a one to recognize you on the dollars.
Well, I think the whole problem with this bill here and everything, this figure is too low. Regardless how you look at it, I've been looking at it and trying to figure it out. There isn't anybody can live on that. If you had three children, you could, I guess that's what it is. $60 a week. You get $240.
Well, that is a rate for someone who, in one full trace rate year, is making less than $1,200 for the entire year. Therefore, on average, making less than $100 a month for their own job before they get on the market. I have no problem trying to adjust some of those up. I don't think the committee or the legislature feel about that. That is an adjustment up from the other bills.
I don't think that means he's only making $100 a month. I think it means that because of the geographical area that he lives in, he only has the opportunity to work for a very short period of time.
And would you support an increase in that figure?
I would, yes. I would.
Maybe we only need one more.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, there are two things, though. I think you're right. First of all, I think we have to, I think it was you that stated, we have to increase the I think the letter should come from this committee to the Finance Committee or the State Conference Committee stating that we want so many investigators. It has come out as a firm recommendation to this committee. We've got to attack that problem. Then also take a look at the number of employees that are going to be necessary to get what you want done in a timely fashion so that we're not just passing something that's not going to take effect until January. I just don't favor that at all.
I don't either.
I'm not in favor of, you know, just sitting here and watching the dog and pony show here every morning, and then all of a sudden we're told now that what they're proposing won't come into effect until January 1. It seems to me that, you know, during the interim between
then and now, we could have the, as you suggested, legislative council make allowances for interim work with the department so that we have something more comprehensive to present to the next legislature. It's obvious that there are some philosophical and policy questions that the administration has regarding the dependent factor. But one of the points Mr. Anderson made earlier is that when you take into consideration dependents, because that individual who has dependents doesn't pay any more simply because he has dependents, he is still under the law eligible for higher benefits. That does make sense from a social point of view because that individual is incurring larger expenses to keep that family going. And I don't understand, and honestly, with all the changes that have been presented to this committee, I just don't see how the administration can expect us to really sit down and say, this is what we want. This afternoon, you've asked for something specific.
Yeah, we're asking for the most recent update on this information we have that would apply to this last schedule that does have an increase in the lower figures. I understand Mr. Osterman's problem. Maybe we can increase those slightly, too. I also asked for fiscal notes if relating to this problem, moving the effective date closer. If we have to put some more people on board, what would that be, and so forth. And, of course, we already have the information so that we can discuss what we should forward to the Finance Committee in a free conference, asking for more investigators with regard to improper payments.
Mr. Okay. Yeah, I'd like to address the point of the dependency allowance in this this analogy everybody's drawing with insurance and the premium paid in is the same for everybody, but there are different benefits. And there are a lot of lines of insurance where that's the case. The state's group policy is the perfect example. The state pays in the same amount for every state employee, and the amount of benefits greatly differ, between a single employee, a married employee with six children. You have cases where both the husband and wife are state employees. The state's paying in double premium, getting back a lesser on the amount of premium being paid in. I think they get back a lesser. A lot of group health plans where the premium paid in per employee is constant, and yet benefits being drawn out.
Well, some of them do vary. Some of them do provide for additional paid in depending on the number of dependents, and then others don't. I don't know which one the state is.
Yeah, especially in the area of group health plans or health plans, there are a lot of different plans, and there are some that provide for constant per employee payments and varying degrees of benefits. So I think you can't make a blanket statement that that in all forms of insurance, that what we're doing is applying a social formula here, and that in all lines of insurance, this isn't the case, because there are lines of insurance where different levels of benefits results from the same base premium. And when you could make an actuarial distinction if you wanted to.
Commissioner Arbeck has handled.
Yeah, the state doesn't pay anything in on each individual. The state reimburses the fund for those who will draw. I think it's going to be about $7 million under the old bill for the year. We just, if someone draws unemployment insurance, the state will
pay. We're talking about health.
We're talking about the employers. Well, what we're talking about is the employer paying enough, the same premium for each. For an employee who has no dependents and an employee who has three dependents, and the analogy is that there should be some higher premium perhaps for somebody who's got the dependents, or he should be drawing the same benefit because they're paying in the same premium. There are lines of insurance where that simply isn't the case, and I don't think that analogy is really valid.
We're approaching the witching hour. Get a short comment.
Just an observation. I don't know, probably about as workable as most we've heard, but I wonder if a person could be given an option. I don't know if it's ever been done anywhere, and say, okay, I have two children. For an extra $5 or whatever I'm putting into it, do you want to cover them? And I can choose three kids. I agree that there's no question there's more cost when you have dependent children. But I don't know if this would work. But say to me, okay, like you're doing a health plan, she doesn't have any dependents, say, or I do. Okay, you want to pay more for it? I said, yeah, and I'll get more back. And I don't know what the ratio is. or I have the option, if I say, no, that's too much out of my check, forget it.
I could sure see that as an administrative nightmare, having to go back and find out what someone said.
I would, you'd have to sign up on the other one, sure.
Mr. Earl.
Not so much on the subject, I have a request, Mr. Chairman, and I, that request would be that, I know you're moving the speed and the length of the speed, but to develop our scenario in Alaska Municipal, we'd like to request that you maybe give us about 10 more days to get some numbers together.
I don't think it could be 10 days. I think what'll happen, we'll try, after we succeed, to reach a consensus exactly on what we're doing. Then you'll see what those figures are. Of course, this bill then goes through one other committee in the House, to the House floor, to probably two committees in the Senate, the same floor. We'll certainly have time to come in and comment about it.
Well, in all due respect to the committee, we'd like to follow the process. We wouldn't want you to think of it.
I mean, if we agreed on everything right now, I don't see how the agency could have a bill for us to sign out until at least next Tuesday. Because we've got to make sure that the bill's right and that we've got the formula in there and all that. So that would be the very least something could be moving out of this committee, and then it has to go to the House before it goes to the floor. Ms. Carlson, you've started to get up to comment to the committee several times. Why don't you try again?
The time is short, Mr. Brown, and I can go to the department after. The one statement that probably concerned me more than other was that Rod Brown testified that the employers, to find out what it would cost them, could multiply their current tax times 178%. Mr. Chairman, without talking to Mr. Brown, I would have to say that that has to be an erroneous assumption for all employers in the state to be told they can multiply what their cost is by 178%. Those whose employees stay under the 10,000 or whatever the minimum base is, wherever it is now, are not going to have that 178% increase. And I think for that statement to be left to the committee, either I'm badly off track or the statement is.
I'd like to hear it.
Okay. Before you answer,
okay, so go ahead.
Well, I didn't understand it, by the way, before he gets a chance to reflect your statement. What I understand is that you have to fund the present system. That's already triggered in as 100%. To increase the various formulas by an additional percent, it's going to, you plug in that other 78%.
Well, that part I understand.
I didn't hear anything else beyond that.
Right, that's exactly right, Mr. Anderson. 178%. What we were saying is that there's going to be a 78% increase in benefit costs under the proposed committee bill. And you have that, given the program we have right now, that's 100% of the existing cost. An additional 78%, so you multiply 178% times existing costs. And that's how much
the total cost of the whole program would be.
Right.
That's not necessarily any one employer. Some employers, you stated later on in your presentation, in fact, may even, in an unusual case, have a decrease in their total.
Yeah, I don't want to imply that it's going to double anybody's cost.
Well, soon. Those would pay over $19,000 a year, almost double.
And you will have information throughout the whole schedule, and like I say, from a decrease in sum to much more of an increase than we've actually shown here. But the 178% is just the figure for deriving the total cost, I expect. It's not an increase by any means of the total program. It's a 78% increase in the total program cost.
Paid at a different level by varying different kinds of employers.
Right.
Did you have something else, Mr. Carlson?
No, I wanted to talk to the department afterwards.
If they have a few seconds, I'll go over a couple of those figures with them.
There's nothing further, we'll adjourn and reconvene at 3 o'clock this afternoon.